Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we all know how the birth control pill revolutionized things for women 50 years ago. How would a male contraceptive change things? Maybe you saw the article in the Times over the weekend about renewed scientific interest in male contraception following promising research from Columbia University toward the development of a low-impact male birth control pill. But questions remain about whether men would take it, if women would trust men to take it, and why it's taking so long anyway for a male pill to become a reality. Joining me now is the New York Times reporter who wrote that article, Pam Bellick. Hey, Pam, welcome back to WNYC.
Happy to be here.
And men, women, our phones are open. Talk about whether you think a male contraceptive pill would be an attractive option. Guys, would you take it? Women, would you trust him? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And, oh, you can ask science questions, too. It's okay to actually go for the knowledge here. 212-433-9692 or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. So you reported on scientific advances toward a male contraceptive. What's the latest on the research?
Well, there's a lot of activity going on in this field that's kind of interesting. The research that's been going on for a while now involves hormones similar to a female birth control pill. And they've been doing that for a while, and they've gotten increasing success, but they still haven't quite managed to get it to work for every man. It's about 95% of the men it works for, and they can't really tell why for those 5% it doesn't work. So they're working on trying to get closer to, you know, 100% effectiveness, and they're also working on trying to mitigate some of the side effects or prevent some of the possible side effects that they don't know about yet, like does it affect the prostate, that kind of thing.
What side effects do they know about?
Well, they know that it seems to affect mood. There's some depression. Some of the men that I talked to said that they, you know, would sort of overreact to situations that they didn't react to before. This is something probably women are familiar with hormones. They also know that it has some effects, not serious, they don't think, but it can have some effects on the heart. It can affect cholesterol. It can cause acne. So none of those are hugely desirable. And when you're looking to, you know, market, say, a hormone pill, or if the FDA is going to be looking to approve it, mm-hmm. what they want to show is that it's at least as effective as female birth control, and that the side effects are, you know, at least tolerable to most people.
Right.
In other words, people are going to use it. So
the effectiveness still sounds to me like a big hurdle. You said 95% effective.
Right.
Tell me what the stat is for the female birth control pill. But when I hear 95% effective, I'm thinking, well, wait, if this is going to fail 5 out of every 100 times, that's pregnancy roulette.
Right. That's not the way to think about it, though. It's effective for 95% of the men. It's 100% effective for 95% of the men who use it, and they can tell who's in that 5% group. In other words,
you can be tested before you actually go out in the world.
Exactly. So you'll know that it's not working for you because your sperm count is not getting low.
I see. That's what they do with vasectomies, as you probably know.
Right.
After you have a vasectomy, you then go for a sperm count test to see if it actually worked, because occasionally it doesn't.
Right. And then, so separately, they're trying to, a number of scientists are looking at non-hormonal methods. And what's interesting is that they've been sort of looking back in the medical dustbins of drug development, and they've found a number of drugs that were, say, started to be developed for skin treatment or worm infections, things like that. And the drug companies, you know, deep in the literature, it says, well, you know, we stopped developing this because it turned out that it was a testicular toxin. And so some of these scientists now are saying, well, you know, one person's testicular toxin might be another person's contraceptive. Let's take a look at how this works. And they're they're finding that depending on the drug, it can interfere with either production of sperm, which is what hormones do, or it can sort of interrupt things along the way. Like you can produce sperm, but they might not get mature enough to complete their stated purpose. Or you can interrupt the movement of sperm. So sperm gets produced, but it just can't get to the egg because the mechanism that sort of kickstarts it to get there can be interrupted. And so those are considered very attractive because they don't have the potential hormonal side effects, but there still needs to be more study done to make sure that they, you know, can be developed into drugs that work.
Pam Bellick reporting on advances in male contraception research for the New York Times. And Greg in Northport, you're on WNYC. Hi, Greg.
Hi, how are you? I love your show.
Thank you.
I would only take it if I was in a committed relationship because it doesn't protect you from STDs. You'd still need a condom. And the other thing is, of course, is how long after you stop taking any of these pills do you return to normal? Is there any long, sustainable effects?
Right. Well, that's a really good point. And one of the main things that scientists want to make sure of is that these are reversible. What they have found so far is that with the hormonal methods that have been the ones that have been most studied in men, some of the others have still only been studied in animals, that they reverse pretty quickly, usually a few weeks or up to, say, 2 or 3 months. And both of the men that I interviewed in my story were in committed relationships. They were both married, and they were both, after going off the hormones, within a few months able to father children. You know, they've had some pretty good success with that, and there's indications that with the non-hormonal methods, they'll find that they're reversible also.
Thank you, Greg. Xenia in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, I'd like to make two comments. The first is that I think that this is a real serious problem, and I don't think that this is actually empowering to men. I think that it's a myth that birth control was actually pro-woman or very empowering to women. Instead of following a system like the rhythm method or a method that allows you to get in touch with your actual natural hormonal function and the beauty of how your body works, you take a pill that messes with your hormones. I think that if there was a pill to lower sperm counts for men, I've said this many times, that if like castration was, for example, as common as hysterectomy, there would be riots in the streets. If birth control, although it has its place in preventing unwanted pregnancy, it's not necessarily empowering to women. And the rhythm method word on the street is about 90% effective. I think it could be slightly more effective if women in this country were generally nutritionally, et cetera, healthier and could manage their hormonal flow and be more consistent tracking their cycle every month.
Is your emphasis on the rhythm method religiously based or otherwise?
No, I just don't think that it's empowering to take a chemical that alters the natural function of the human body in order to and tell yourself that and tell society that it's empowering because it allows you a feeling of control. You know, 100, 200 years ago, I think it has its place, and it does help certain people, and not everybody should necessarily be parents, but it's troublesome. And I think that another interesting point I'd like to briefly make is that in Chinese medicine, the sperm content of a man's semen and his sexual fluid is considered to be related to something called Jing energy, which is the thing that allows you to be upright for many years and have a great deal of longevity. And they believe in certain sexual practices where it promotes a man's longevity to, for example, ejaculate less or things like that. Mm-hmm. And to mess with the natural production of a man's vital fluid is considered like a violation of the male body and of sort of the spirituality and the beauty and the natural function of the body.
And I'm going to leave it there, but I appreciate all your points. And Pam Bullock, on the first thing that she was talking about, you know, it's interesting that when the pill for women was developed, it was seen by some as a feminist victory. But then women's groups changed and started seeing the pill as also a burden that should be pushed off at least 50% to men. So I don't know. It just seems that that, you know, there's some connection between what Xenia is saying and the history of feminist thought on this.
Sure. And, you know, this issue is interesting. I mean, I think the reaction that we've gotten to this story, we've heard from women who have said, you know, it's time for men to have to shoulder this burden and to have to, you know, feel the effects of hormones, for example, just as we do. But I've also heard from a lot of men who have said this makes perfect sense to them, that they don't want to have to be in a position of either trusting that their partner is using birth control or having to use a condom, which is essentially, unless you opt for a vasectomy, their options right now. And so it does seem like there's been a bit of a sea change in the way that men look at this. One survey I saw said that I think 70% of the men surveyed said that they would be open to doing this kind of thing.
Pat in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Pat.
Hi. Hi, Brian. Your last call talked about empowering women when it comes to birth control. I was real puzzled by that. You know, if they developed a pill that was effective and didn't have a lot of side effects, I would take it. I think women would be foolish to trust a man to take the birth control. You know,
Pat in Brooklyn says, I'll take this, but don't trust me to do it.
Right, you know. And that's of course, you know, one of the things people will have to weigh.
And in fact, Pam, were federal agencies thus far reluctant to fund this research because they thought men wouldn't take it? And are pharmaceutical companies, which haven't embraced any method yet, unsure about whether there would be a market among men rather than whether the science would support it?
I think federal agencies have, in the last sort of 10 years, they've gotten much more interested in this, and they've really been, the NIH has really been pushing this, in part because they are getting indications that men are more receptive, and that also from a global population angle, that it's another option that people could use in the developing world. Pharmaceutical companies are hanging back and waiting, and my sense is that once they are shown something that could have the effectiveness of a female method, and once they're convinced that there is a market, that they would be very interested in this. So I think that's one of the reasons why a lot of scientists are interested in this, is that they see the potential for it coming to market. And just with respect to what your last caller was saying about you know, having women having to trust men, there is one option that that involves an implant, sort of like a Norplant implant. I've been hearing from the men and from the scientists involved that it's popular with some men because it's implanted in your bicep and you can actually see it. It creates a little bit of a bulge, and so apparently some men like kind of showing it off at parties, and it's popular with the women because the women say, ah, here's a guy who's
the new road to a beefy bicep. And I guess there's no trust issue if it's implanted in your body. The most difficult question I will ask you today in our last 15 seconds, is it sexist for people to think that men can't be trusted to take the pill they say they're taking, since women are so widely trusted to take the pill they say they're taking?
I'm going to duck that one, Brian, because I think that probably depends on who you ask. But I think it's also probably the kind of thing that once it becomes part of the culture, it will equalize and women will learn,
how
to deal with that trust issue, and men will, just as men do
yes,
now.
Yes, or are men just less trustworthy? That's going to have to be our follow-up segment with someone other than a science reporter like Pam Bellick, who wrote up the progress toward a male contraceptive in the New York Times last week. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.